Welcome to MuggleCast, your weekly ride into the Wizarding World fandom. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
Micah.
And I'm Laura.
And on today's episode, we are going to discuss scenes that happened in the background of the Harry Potter series, scenes which we didn't actually get to read or watch, and beg for these to be a part of the inevitable Harry Potter TV adaptation. This is going to be a fun way to discuss all those moments that we heard about from Harry's point of view but never saw firsthand. So we have some big ones, we have some dramatic ones, and then we have some lighter ones too. So it's going to be a fun discussion today. And then panel, at the end of today's show, I am going to share a revelation I had last night while brushing my teeth with my Quip toothbrush.
Wow. Ooh.
This is a game changer. I haven't told you guys about this yet. I realized what it's going to take to get this Harry Potter TV series to be created. I know what we have to do.
I don't like surprises. You know this. I'm already very
nervous. Sorry, this is a tease.
This could be a brand new segment. Andrew's Toothbrush Time, brought to you by Quip.
Before we get into our discussion, we have some Muggle mail. First of all, just wanted to start with this comment from Dreamy Hogwarts. She replied to one of our posts on Instagram, and she pointed out this writing by J.K. Rowling on Pottermore about Neville, which actually explains his thinking during the sorting. We were joking last week about Neville not wanting to go into Hufflepuff. In fact, he actually did. J.K. Rowling wrote, in Neville's case, the hat was determined to place him in Gryffindor. Neville, intimidated by that house's reputation for bravery, requested a placing in Hufflepuff. Their silent wrangling resulted in triumph for the hat.
Oh.
Shocker. Neville lost the fight.
So wait, I thought you got to choose. If you really cared that much, you got to choose where you were going to go.
Do we really believe Neville. That or do we think... Do we think Dumbledore was having Harry on about choice because it underscored the plot of the book? But
yeah.
I think the hat really liked.
The hat kind of wanted to put Hermione in Ravenclaw, right?
Yeah.
And she requested Gryffindor.
This is why people don't like Potter no more, because it pulls the rug out. From
everybody gets a choice except for Neville.
Poor Neville.
Well, I think too, like Neville just, it wasn't that he didn't want to be a Gryffindor, like his parents were huge Gryffindors apparently, but it's just that he was so afraid of being considered brave and held to that standard. So the hat was like, I'm gonna put you here because I know that's what you really want, but you're too afraid to ask for.
Yeah, I agree. I think he spent his entire childhood and, you know, much of his adolescent years being forced to like try and fit into this box or like fit into his dad's shadow. Mm-hmm. And he was never his dad. So he was like, you know what? I'm just going to like F this. I'm just going to create my own path and be a Hufflepuff. And then the sorting hat was like, nah. And so he was like, you know what? Fine. I'm going to teach Herbology. The closest I can get to being a Hufflepuff.
Neville gets the Love last it. Laugh.
The sorting hat, meanwhile, is up in the office being like, no!
I wanted you to be an Auror.
By the end of it, it was the harder path, but Neville being a Gryffindor, being able to show his Gryffindor off. I mean, the hat gives Neville the sword. It probably gloats its ass off while doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's as he's giving Neville the sword, he's like, oh, you wanted to be in Hufflepuff, huh? Yeah? Okay. Well, just remember this.
Told you so. Yeah. Knew you would need this.
I bet they have conversation during lunch.
If you were a Hufflepuff, you would have pulled only a mandrake out of our hat. And how would that have fared against Voldemort?
Does Voldemort even have ears?
Nagini just would have had it for lunch.
I really like this reading that we're developing of a sassy sorting hat.
Oh, yeah.
I told you.
Well, our first email actually relates to this, talking about Neville and his sorting. It's from Catherine, and she says, hey, MuggleCast, in your latest episode, you guys theorized that in Sorcerer's Stone, Neville took a while to be sorted because he was convincing the sorting hat to place him in Gryffindor. I actually like to believe the opposite, that the sorting hat was trying to convince Neville he had a place in Gryffindor. Neville probably didn't see the qualities that made his parents Gryffindors in himself because his information was coming from his grandmother, who was very critical of him. He was raised in a household that did not nurture his self-confidence, and at first, Hogwarts was not kind to him either. Although I agree Dumbledore's comments about standing up to your friends and the house points that were given as insufficient, it is important to note that it was probably the first time Neville has been acknowledged and praised this way by an authority figure. Neville's journey is finding his self-confidence, not his bravery. So I find it more in character for this to begin with his sorting into Gryffindor. Love the show.
Wow, Catherine nailed it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
Our next email comes from Sarah Joy. Sarah says, I just finished listening to episode 481 and wanted to add on to a couple of the connections you made between Harry and Neville. It's interesting when you look at which Horcruxes they end up destroying in regards to the order they were taken out. Harry destroys the first when he stabs the diary, which ultimately sets into motion the search for the other Horcruxes. Neville destroys the last when he beheads Nagini, officially taking out the final form of protection Voldemort has. I love this. Again, Neville tees Harry up for success.
He closes the book on Horcruxes.
Yep.
And next email comes from Bree. They write, really love the discussion on the professors. I had a few thoughts about Lupin returning to Hogwarts. I'm not trying to jump on the Dumbledore setting up everyone for slaughter train, but I found it kind of weird that Dumbledore would offer Lupin a potentially cursed position. Mm. On first reading, I was so impressed by and inspired by Dumbledore offering Lupin a job, despite the complicating factors of his werewolf status. Now, I wonder if it might have been slightly callous considering Dumbledore's growing theory about the position. This train of thought also led me to wonder if the true tipping point for Lupin to take the position had to do with protecting Harry from Sirius, due to his specific knowledge about Sirius, rather than a driving desire to hold a stable position. I don't know, but thinking about the impact Lupin had on Harry's passion for defense against the dark arts, as one of the first windows into Lily's personality and the general fathering that he did, especially in Book 3, it's incredibly sad that Harry seemed to lose interest in maintaining that bond, though no doubt Lupin was going through his own stuff too, in favor of building one with Sirius. I get it. Sirius offered undivided attention, treated Harry like an equal, and gave an option for a way out of Privet Drive for Harry. Either way, as much as it sucks, it is a realistic look at how, as we grow up, we can forget to think, be aware of, or be actively grateful for the people who are helping us along the way, and often don't realize the impact of those interactions or relationships until we have to go on without them.
This is a great observation. I really like this idea that Lupin came in to potentially protect Harry from Sirius, because it is unsettling that Dumbledore would be setting Lupin up for some catastrophic failure.
I mean, I guess we should be relieved that in the end, the only thing that drove Lupin from Hogwarts that year was the racism of the world at large. Like, he got away without a huge injury.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really like the point that she raises about how Harry, despite what Lupin means to him in his third year, doesn't really continue on much with the relationship beyond that. Not in the way that we would expect, but yet he is very, very drawn to Sirius.
Okay, so before we get to our discussion, Quip is back to sponsor this week's episode of MuggleCast, and listen up because they have big news. They have a new toothbrush that rewards you for brushing your teeth. That's right, this wand for your mouth just got way cooler. With Quip's new smart electric toothbrush, good habits can earn you great perks like free products, gift cards, and more. The new Quip Smart Brush for adults and kids connects to the Quip app with Bluetooth. Track when and how well you brush, get tips and coaching to improve your habits because it's watching you move through your mouth, earn points for daily brushing, and bonus points for completing challenges like streaks. You can redeem these points for rewards like free products, gift cards, and discounts from Quip and partners. If you already have a Quip, because you've heard us speak about it and how amazing they are, upgrade it with a smart motor and keep the features you know and love. You get the sensitive sonic vibrations and a 2-minute timer with 30-second pulses for a guided clean, which is so important. You also get one of my favorite aspects, which is the slim, lightweight, and sleek design with no wires or bulky chargers to weigh you down because it's all battery powered. You get the multi-use travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount for less clutter, which is also very handy. And beyond the brush, Quip has everything you need to build a complete routine. You can grab mint or watermelon toothpaste with anti-cavity ingredients for strong, healthy teeth. And they have an eco-friendly solar battery charger to power your Quip with sunshine. I think that is so cool. Start getting rewards for brushing your teeth today and go to getquip.com/muggle right now to get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/muggle, spelled getquip.com/muggle. Quip, better oral health made simple and rewarding. And you have revelations while brushing your teeth, like I do. That's a major benefit. Okay, time now for our main discussion, background scenes that a Harry Potter TV show needs to bring to life. So we're going to talk about scenes we know happened in the background of the core series that we would love to see on screen through an inevitable TV series. And I wanted to talk about this because I'm just counting the seconds until they finally adapt Harry Potter for television. It's been 10 years now, almost, since the final Harry Potter movie came out. It's time for a reboot. And we know these streamers want something Harry Potter related. They all want the big guns. They want the big franchises. And a Harry Potter TV series could run for 20 seasons. You could split each book into 3 seasons at least. There's just so much. And we're going to help them out by writing some new scenes for them today. So we're kind of going to go in chronological order here. We're trying to aim for scenes that didn't appear in the book or the movie. So I just wanted to start with a kind of random one. I want to see the creation of the Marauder's Map. Mm. This is one of the most beloved items, magical items in the Harry Potter series, I think. It's just so cool and a little creepy to be seeing where everybody is at any time. And it's also, what made me think about it is people just love buying this thing, whether it's a physical one at the theme parks or a poster or on a t-shirt. There's all kinds of different versions of the Marauder's Map that you can purchase these days. And I think it just speaks to how popular an item it is. It could be a great way to throw the Give Us a Marauder series people a bone, because this has been one of the biggest requests for a really long time, right? People want a Marauder spinoff of some sort. So we could spend an episode hanging out with the Marauders and seeing them create this map. And of course, it's so important to the Harry Potter series. This scene could run during the Prisoner of Azkaban season to set up the Pettigrew reveal. And of course, Harry's use of it over the following years. What do you guys think?
I love this. I was actually thinking about where would be good placement for this. And it could almost be like a cold open to the Prisoner of Azkaban series. Mm. So like they could start out and like put whatever year it was, like 1970 or 80, whatever. And then like show the Marauders going through all the motions to create the map, and they can all be talking to each other like, no, Padfoot, don't do that, and other stuff like that, so that it establishes those roles. Uh-huh. And you kind of get that throwback scene, and then it like goes straight into the Prisoner of Azkaban story, so that later on when Harry gets the map, you're like, oh yeah, they showed us how it was created in the beginning.
Yeah,
that's so cool. Yeah, I really like this as well. And I think it also allows us to explore Hogwarts in a way that we haven't. We know Harry makes use of a lot of the secret passageways, but it's the Marauders who really discovered them. And to kind of join them on this journey, it would also be really cool to see who is the true architect of the Marauder's Map from a magic standpoint. Like, is it, you know, Sirius and James who are going out and finding a lot of these places, but then relaying the information back to Lupin, who is doing the actual magic itself. And Peter's just kind of chilling on the side, because what is he, unless like he turns into rat form and that's how he helps, by going around the school and finding all the secret passages. Yeah. He never ran into a basilisk though, surprisingly.
He mustn't have done a thorough search. Yeah, I agree with that completely. I also, there's an opportunity to really learn more about the magic that went into creating the Marauder's Map. Like, we'd learn more about magic in general if we figure out how is it exactly that it tracks human beings, like, around with their own name label. Like, what the heck is the magic for that? Because it's got to be ridiculously complex. And, you know, if the show doesn't want to get too bogged down in that, that's all right. But we might... You know, I'd be part of my interest, probably my primary interest in the TV series, in fleshing out these scenes is learning a little bit more. And even being able to place in my head or rectify some of like the character beats, having seen a scene written to describe it, to really illustrate it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on, I'm going to get really dark now. I would like to see the entire night in which Voldemort killed Harry's parents. I'm sorry, but it adds gravity to the remainder of the series. It helps explain why we're all here. and actually, I thought this scene could actually open up the entire series to set everything up. And of course, this scene, it's somewhat illustrated in the book and movie, and again, in the final book. But I'd like to see the whole damn night. The cold open would be Trelawney making the prophecy, and then it would jump ahead to October 31st, 1981. We would also get to see Pettigrew turn his allegiance. That didn't happen that night, but we could see that in this episode. We could see Sirius suggesting that Pettigrew be the Potter Seeker Keeper, and then Lupin being convinced that Sirius betrayed James and Lily. There's a lot here that we've heard about over the years that we never got to see. So I would just like to experience that entire night, set up the entire Harry Potter television series for what's to come.
I agree.
Let me just add to it, because I think that the first one that I listed here is definitely tied into what you just mentioned about the night that Voldemort killed Harry's parents. It's almost, I look at it as a cross town, you know, the face-off between Bellatrix, Rudolphus, Robaston or Robastion, I don't know how to say his name, and Barty Crouch Jr. going head to head with Frank and Alice Longbottom. Was this a situation where Frank and Alice were completely taken by surprise, or were they tipped off in any way? Did they know someone had broken into their house and was about to attack them? How did they protect Neville at the end of the day?
Yes.
So I'm almost thinking like a split screen or rotational shots of like you have Voldemort on one side, you have Bellatrix and these other Death Eaters on the other, and they're making their approach to their respective homes.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's really the benefit of, you know, TV series as a medium, is you can really very easily move throughout different points of view. Not to take the focus off Harry Potter, but this is one of the things that I really enjoy about his Dark Materials series that they're doing on HBO, is that they've really taken advantage of different character POVs in the first series, even though the first book is primarily set from Lyra Belacqua's point of view. They've really found a way to include these other characters' viewpoints, and I think it enriches the story. You know, which is why we're here having this discussion. I love the idea of having a primary episode or like a primary chunk of the first episode of the series dedicated to Harry's parents and Neville's parents. I think it would be so cool.
Yeah,
I agree. And definitely very much of the first couple years at Hogwarts, I really want to get to know the teachers more. Not because an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old isn't interesting or couldn't carry a series. I'm thinking of like the Stranger Things kids are really young and they do a great job at carrying that show. But I do want to see more because I think the screen can, you can occupy that time and you could do really interesting things if you just focus on other POVs.
Yeah, and I think maybe I should have said this at the beginning, but to Laura's point about being able to expand, I mean, television is so many more hours than a movie. How many hours total are the 8 Harry Potter movies? Like 20 total, I would say? 20 hours, that's one season of a television series. So there's so much more availability. And of course, this is one of those unique stories that actually could successfully fill so much time. It wouldn't be filled with BS. You could really fill it with a lot of stuff that would get people talking week to week. The only risk I was thinking about with revealing the prophecy at the very beginning of the series is obviously Harry doesn't learn this himself, and the reader doesn't learn it either until book 5. So there's that. But on the other hand, if you're watching the Harry Potter TV series, you probably know much of what's going to happen anyway. So you might as well take risks like that.
You could also, when you start that first episode, you could hear snippets of the prophecy, but set to a black screen, so you're not actually seeing anything. So it doesn't necessarily give anything away. You don't necessarily see at that point who overheard the prophecy and ultimately relayed that information to Voldemort. I think there's a way that you could do it without it being too spoilery. Because you're right, you have to walk the line between pleasing the fans who grew up with the series, but also making it exciting and new for new fans.
Right.
And not necessarily give away some of the plot points.
I do agree. I think it could be tough early on to introduce some of these characters too, right? Because if you think about a Bellatrix or even some of the other Lestranges or Barty Crouch Jr., you don't get them back until much later on in the series. So it'd be a little weird to maybe have this right at the beginning. Maybe you do a flashback in Goblet of Fire or Order of the Phoenix to tie things in a little bit more. But at the same time, I do think it would be cool for people who are fans of the series to get these characters earlier, because they are a big part of the series. It's just we don't even know it.
I like Laura's idea with the glimpses of the prophecy. It could be like, the one, vanquish, approaches. Just like this echoey bits and pieces.
Creeps me out. That voice creeps me out. Like, if I don't hear another version of Harry's prophecy in any adaptation, I'll be fine. Because
do you think it was Emma Thompson who did it? Or do
I think so.
I mean, obviously, they messed around with her voice.
Right.
But
yeah, I think so. It better have been.
Yeah, I like that, though. It could be overlaid, too, on all the scenes we're talking about.
Right, right.
Oh, sure.
So we're going to jump into the books now. What's your idea, Micah, your next idea?
This is one that just kind of popped into my mind when I was thinking about Sorcerer's Stone, but how all the professors come up with each of the rooms that are designed to protect the Sorcerer's Stone. We see all the rooms mentioned in the book. We don't get all of them in the movie. But just all of the work that went into preparing.
Yeah.
And maybe it's getting some time with each of the professors. It gives you a little bit of insight into who they are as a teacher, maybe where their strengths lie. Thinking about Professor Sprout coming up with Devil's Snare and Flitwick with the keys, McGonagall with the chessboard. Quirrell must have a thing for mountain trolls. The potions room is really a challenge. And then finally, Dumbledore with the Mirror of Erised. So you just get a really good snapshot into the main professors at Hogwarts very early on. So I think just maybe getting a little bit of background here would be cool for a reader.
And while they're doing all of that, putting it all together, the very last thought in their minds is that a group of 11-year-olds are going to be able to come and foil it.
Oh, this is a good system we're putting together.
This is a great system. Just the more lines we get, the more times we can have each of the professors going, this is great. This is going to be great. This is super secure.
And did they all kind of go down together and set this up as a team, or did they go individually? You know, was McGonagall holding Snape's hand as they got through the Devil's Snare? Like, how does that all work?
That definitely is interesting to me, because for security purposes, no one teacher should know what the other teachers really did. Like, not specifically. Right.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, I can see Dumbledore being like, you only get to know this piece of the puzzle. Very much like he was, you know, with Snape when we overhear some of those flashback conversations where he won't give Snape the full picture. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to tell somebody who spends so much time with Voldemort exactly what I'm planning.
Which is crazy, because for as often as he goes on about people should trust Snape, he himself doesn't really reveal,
right?
You know, the full thing.
So is this one of those things where it had to be built from the last room out so that the other professors didn't know?
Well, not necessarily, because like the mirror doesn't even go there until after Christmas. Like
that's true.
But that's Dumbledore.
The
other ones, though, I would think you don't want, if you're suspicious basically of everybody at this point, you can't let Sprout go first, followed by Flitwick, followed by McGonagall. It almost has to work in reverse.
Maybe he blindfolds them and takes them down through the other challenges.
Do they know what they're guarding, by the way? Did he ever tell, like, ahead of time, he was like, hey, so my immortal friend is giving me his Sorcerer's Stone that generates his Elixir of Life. We got to guard it. Or was he just like, hey, there's this package and I can't tell you what's in it, but
maybe Dumbledore makes weird requests like this all the time. And they're just like, oh, fine, whatever he wants this time. You want a potion puzzle room? Okay. You want a chessboard? Fine. Whatever he wants.
Dumbledore regularly asks them to like stump him. He loves riddles, and he's like, right, being more intelligent than the next man. He's like, okay, it's your contract is coming up. Time to build a puzzle room.
Maybe this is how he like retrains them. He wants them all to come up with new riddles at every few years to make sure they're still up to snuff. And they're like, yeah, Dumbledore just says, I'm going to try to crack these puzzles. You just set them up. I'm going to crack them. No other reason. Just set them up. It's for Dumbledore's entertainment.
Well, I want to know who is feeding the troll now, because it was there all year, presumably.
It was drinking the potion, so Snape had to keep going back down and refilling. Who's feeding Fluffy?
You know, we're exposing a lot of flaws here, and I'm once again reminded that Hogwarts is a security nightmare. Starting to sound like a security nightmare. Security nightmare.
But it would be fun to unexpectedly get an answer to some of these questions that we've now developed, right?
Right,
so it's like,
right,
you know, we could see in a TV series Filch or Hagrid going to feed Fluffy regularly.
You just see Hagrid walking through the castle with like five steaks. and Harry's like, why are you taking that to the third floor corridor? He's like, none of your business. Just stop asking questions.
I eat my dinners on a new floor every night, Harry. Now run along. Let's move on to Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah. So when I was thinking about Chamber of Secrets, this is something that's always fascinated me. Y'all might remember that I've talked about writing a fan fiction about this back in the day, but I want flashbacks to the founders and particularly Slytherin's departure from Hogwarts, which we hear about in Chamber of Secrets in connection with the Basilisk.
Love
and
it.
The chamber itself. I think this would be so cool because if I recall correctly, they learn about it in Professor Binns's class. It's like the one time everybody is actually engaged in his class is when they get him to tell the story of the Chamber of Secrets. And it would be so cool to intersperse that narrative with flashbacks to the founders and, you know, the frictions that ultimately drove them apart.
If they do this, and I know we aren't necessarily getting into casting right now, but the people that are at the theme park as Godric Gryffindor, Rowena Ravenclaw, Helga, and Salazar in the portraits that talk to you do such an amazing job in such a short amount of time at embodying those characters that my memory of them at the theme park is really what sells me on having the Marauders be part or having the founders be part of a TV series. I think it would be great.
I also like this idea because a Hogwarts founder's story has also been highly requested, just like the Marauders story has been. And this would be a big draw for people.
I agree. I think it also just adds, it further fleshes out the universe because we know that a lot of the reason that we see many of the current prejudices in the Potter universe goes all the way back to the founders' time, even before their time. But to see that sort of struggle embodied in the founders who are like, we agree that we're here to provide a quality education and prepare magical people for the world. But then there's this turmoil over like, well, who actually counts, right?
Right.
And then you can kind of see, you know, obviously the very extreme prejudice that comes from Salazar Slytherin, but then you also have Gryffindor who's like, I only want the brave ones. Right. And Ravenclaw who's like, I only want the smart ones. And Hufflepuff's like, I'll take anyone. It's fine.
So wasn't this also introduced during one of the Sorting Hat songs? So maybe this, I know we have this slotted for Chamber of Secrets, but that could be a good place for it too. If you're hearing the Sorting Hat and it's interspersed with cutscenes kind of revealing the history of the founders.
Yeah, there. I honestly think there are a lot of places where you could sprinkle cutscenes with the founders. It doesn't necessarily have to be Chamber of Secrets, but I think the ultimate confrontation between Slytherin and the other three founders, and his departure would have to be in Chamber of Secrets. One caveat here, and I know we're going to talk about these later, this could potentially be tied into Fantastic Beasts, depending on how deep they go into Tom Riddle's young years and his opening the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Love if it. They go there, yeah. I think they probably will.
Yeah.
At least touch on it.
I won't say they have to, but I think it's very high likelihood that they do. And I like this even as a standalone episode, never mind just, you know, a series of flashbacks. I think that you could really dig deep into, as you were saying, the founders' relationships with each other and how even in present day with Chamber of Secrets, it's influencing the events that we're seeing.
I just
want to say, is it wrong of me? I always, when I think of Salazar Slytherin, John Malkovich comes to mind.
Yeah,
I would love to see him play Salazar Slytherin.
Is he, he's American though, right? So that might not work, but he's got the look sure.
They got to abolish that rule.
Yeah.
They got to get, just because, you know, for background characters, I'm not saying Harry Potter needs to be an American actor next time. But
actually, you know what? I mean, Johnny Depp is an American actor.
Yeah.
So they are kind of abolishing it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Jude Law too, right?
But what I don't want to see any more of is those flashbacks without dialogue. The movies did that. I mean, the entire Snape's Worst Memory scene was reduced in the end to flashes without any real words. There was no substance at all. The Snape Lily stuff as children, same deal. They got to knock that the heck off. If there's time in a TV series, I want a real actual flashback with actual dialogue, please. Actual characterization.
That's fair.
You know. Yeah. Oh, geez.
Speaking of Chamber and professors, you have an idea here, Eric.
Yeah, I want to see the behind-the-scenes Gilderoy Lockhart stuff. Like, it's bad enough that Harry, Ron, and Hermione have to put up with Gilderoy throughout the year, especially Harry, because the two of them interact quite a bit. But by the end of it, when we see, I think it's Flitwick or... McGonagall says, "Oh, your time is at hand, Gilderoy. Finally, you've been telling us all year that you're the one to find the chamber, and you know exactly where it is. Now you do it." I want to see the gradual breakdown in just professional respect and like courtesy that the teachers have for Lockhart. Like, I just want to see, like, it'll almost be cringy if they do it right, but like, you could spend the whole year on the Gilderoy Lockhart character just being this ridiculous guy who like is entitled and just has so many delusions, and gradually pick that apart. I think it'll make the end that much more satisfying if we just got some teacher perspectives throughout the year.
Yeah,
really, you know, we only get glimpses of it in the book, you know, obviously up until the climax. But the only person that we really, if I recall correctly, that we only get like a very straightforward perspective from early on is Hagrid. I was just rereading Chamber the other day, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione go to his cabin, and Lockhart is just left, and Hagrid's like, "Yeah. I told him that I knew exactly what I was doing and I didn't read his book." And that was when he decided he needed to leave. The only reason he's here is because he was literally the only person who applied for the job. Dumbledore had no choice. I was like, wow, Hagrid, that's pretty unprofessional, man. These are 12-year-olds.
But who are they going to tell? Are they 12-year-olds?
I mean, yeah.
Kind of coming off of this idea, Eric, I think it'd be cool to hear all the other professors discussing the curse on the DADA role. I want to hear their thoughts on it. And I would love to hear, this subject has always fascinated me, like why teachers are willing to do it. Well, why wizards are willing to do it, knowing the high turnover rate. That should be a very, very, very large red flag. So I'd love to hear them all talking about it more.
That's a good point. And you know, they don't even need to have that line between Dumbledore, that scene between Dumbledore and Harry, where he reveals it. You could actually reveal that type of information through the teachers entirely.
Yeah.
in the future.
Who is Dumbledore setting up for failure now?
Oh boy.
Does he know? Should we tell him?
I do like the idea of these individual professor episodes where we really get to learn a lot more about who they are and what they're all about.
Yeah.
Andrew, when you were talking about this idea of how they feel about the fact that the Defense Against the Dark Arts position rolls over every year, it got me thinking too, it would be interesting to see how they are all reacting, particularly in Chamber of Secrets, to the fact that people are being petrified within the school. Like, what is the adult perspective on what is going on here? We know the kids are freaked out, but are the professors freaked out too?
And right.
What's going on in their head?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Getting into Prisoner of Azkaban right now, the biggest like introduction, the way I see like series three or whatever season it is that is the Prisoner of Azkaban adaptation of the Harry Potter TV series opening, I see it opening with Cornelius Fudge visiting Azkaban. And I want to actually get Azkaban, right? Like, I want to actually see it. I want to see, like, learn the layout a little bit. And I want to see this interaction between Fudge and Sirius, where Sirius asks for the paper under the ruse that he likes doing the crosswords. This is a scene that is illustrated kind of in a backstory. Like, Fudge talks about it in the Three Broomsticks. But the beauty of a TV series is that you can actually get it fleshed out. So, you know, Cornelius Fudge going to Azkaban, having to sign in, whatever the process is, like if there's Dementor jailers, you see them like floating outside it, but surely there's people working in the prison, like with paperwork, having to sign you in. These are all the unanswered questions that you could just like answer in one fell swoop if we get this scene where Fudge visits.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting look at the security at Azkaban, thinking ahead to the breakouts. Like, how did that happen? So that would kind of be interesting to see. It would also be a nice look into Sirius's mental state.
Yeah.
Like, to help sell us on where he is, especially when we get to later books.
Well, and how do humans relate to Dementors? Because you do hear in the books constantly that Dumbledore is angry with them. He's talking with them. Fudge is talking with them. If the government is controlling or in control of the Dementors, how do they do it? Do they talk to them and the Dementors like emote? Do they do like
sign language?
It's such a simple
smoke
question.
Signals.
But like, it's never answered. And you're just like, how do they even have any kind of working relationship? Like, how do they communicate? So there's just a lot there with Dementors that I think, you know, the Azkaban adaptation is a perfect opportunity, especially because it comes back around. You're going to be dealing with the eventual Dementor defection from the Ministry. So it's pretty important to answer some of these, I think, fundamental questions in an adaptation to just give themselves an easier way through the later books.
What I really like about this is that it takes us to a place that we've heard about, but we've never been to.
Right.
And that's actually quite surprising, given that there's been 7 books and we've never stepped foot into Azkaban. We've only heard stories about it. And so to go there and go inside would be really interesting. And I was always under the impression that nobody worked at Azkaban, that it was just Dementors that were hovering around the outside, because you'd almost need, remember how Umbridge is set up in Deathly Hallows, where she has her Patronus sitting on the desk and it's just kind of keeping the Dementors at bay? I would figure that that is what you would need if you're a regular witch or wizard who's working in Azkaban, because otherwise your soul would be gone within a matter of minutes.
Right.
Then again, thinking of the prisoners, I mean, they are in their own separate cells, right? They're not just all lumped together. And because it's the middle of nowhere and there's so many Dementors, they can't escape. Mm-hmm. There does appear to be some kind of process by which Fudge is like signing in and oversees the various cells. So there is something to it there.
And then you have one more from Azkaban.
Yeah. Speaking of the prophecy and the night that Harry's parents die and all that stuff, really the next morning, the confrontation between Sirius Black and Peter Pettigrew on the street, where we know now that Pettigrew actually outsmarts Sirius and surprises him with some decisive, quick wand action, stages his own death by cutting off one of his fingers, and like just completely blows a hole in the street. What a good action sequence. That's one thing we haven't talked about just yet. TV series and action.
Yeah.
This could be a huge set piece. This could be a huge, like, this could be the way to start a Prisoner of Azkaban adaptation even. But furthermore, and kind of like just shoehorning this in at the end, but why does Sirius Black, like, he's so shocked at what Pettigrew does that he laughs his way to jail. Like, he just completely, like, he's hysterical when the Aurors come and take him in, and he doesn't seem to defend himself. Like, how is it exactly that Sirius comes to be in Azkaban for a crime that he very much did not commit? And I think in POA 2, Dumbledore says he gave evidence that Black was the secret keeper and this, that, the other thing. But, you know, I don't understand, from as somebody who loves Sirius, I don't understand why he didn't defend himself after the shock of what Pettigrew did and the humor that he sees, like the sick humor. Why didn't he eventually start to try and defend himself?
Maybe he felt like he didn't have anything to try and defend himself for anymore. I mean, his best friends have been killed.
Yeah.
His godson is being sent to live with his horrible aunt and uncle. As far as the entire wizarding world knows, he was the secret keeper. And all he has to refute that is his word. And nobody's going to believe him.
That's a good point.
But knowing that nuance, I want to see it in a TV series. Yeah. You know, like, I want to be able to fully understand, like, that guy at the moment when he is put into Azkaban, so that when we meet him 13 years later, it's even better.
This may be for another conversation, but I wonder, we're talking about Dumbledore, did he allow Sirius to go to Azkaban so that the rest of this could all play out the way that he wanted it to? You said that he gave evidence against him, but clearly there would have been ways to exonerate Sirius. Veretasirum comes to mind.
Yeah.
There are things that I'm sure could have been done, given how powerful Dumbledore is. He's willing to testify on behalf of a known former Death Eater in Snape, but yet he's so willing to send Sirius to jail.
Yeah.
Old age.
I love that new excuse. Print that on a shirt.
Just one other thing, though, that came to mind, why I like this moment too, Eric, is with Peter Pettigrew, and this kind of ties into what I will talk about in Goblet of Fire with him and Barty Crouch Jr., being able to hoodwink Moody. Who is Peter Pettigrew at the end of the day? Like, how good is he?
Yeah. Right?
Like, you just talked about how he's able to trick Sirius and betray the Potters. How effective was he in that moment with Barty where he's able to overtake Moody? I think he probably doesn't get enough credit at times for how good he might be.
But do we want to give him credit? I mean,
not really.
Yeah. That's why I don't want to like him. I hate the big reveal scene in the third movie doesn't work for me because he's too much of a caricature. He's too much of a ratty human.
It is a lot. Yeah.
When in fact, he's a character who has a lot of weird skills and depth. Like, I don't know. Yeah. So I want to see, to your point, Micah, like, yeah, Pettigrew is a real jerk, but he absolutely has some competencies. Mm-hmm. Like, he does get the better of people.
Right.
Agreed.
Good may have not been the right word. More accomplished in certain areas than maybe we give
skills,
him credit for.
Yeah, I get you.
He's underestimated constantly.
Mm-hmm. Now let's jump ahead to Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, so Barty Crouch strikes again for me, but I was rereading part of Goblet of Fire the other day, and I was thinking about how Moody is overtaken by both him and Pettigrew, and how they're able to do this efficiently, effectively, and then completely hoodwink Arthur Weasley. And we hear about this in passing later on in the story, but we don't actually see it. And I don't know if it probably doesn't work in terms of showing it right at the start of Goblet of Fire. Maybe you need a little bit more time because you don't want to reveal the fact that Moody isn't in fact Moody until later on. But I think it would be cool to get a flashback and see exactly how Barty Crouch, Peter Pettigrew go about doing this and are able to overtake an Auror. You know, he's one of the best there is, and yet he is able to be overpowered.
Yeah.
It's not his proudest moment, but I absolutely do want to see that on scene, on the screen.
It would help sell it I think it's important to see that, to really sell it, because like you're saying, Moody is a great Auror, so how was he taken over?
Exactly.
And again, this is something like he's a beloved character, so people are like, really? Moody? So being able to see that would be very cool. Okay, let's move on to Order of the Phoenix. Laura, you have a couple ideas.
I do. So these are inspired by our conversations during Chapter by Chapter. I want to know, what was Dumbledore up to after he left Hogwarts in Order of the Phoenix? He made that spectacular departure, and then he's just like gone for a while. I want to know where he's staying, or is he looking for Horcruxes? Is he chilling in the Forbidden Forest with Grop, as we predicted? I want to know what he's up to, because I figure he's not just twiddling his thumbs.
No.
Right.
I think it's a mix of everything. It's starting to look into the Horcruxes more. It's chilling with Grop. It's setting up a couple gay bars in London. It's a vacation in Costa Rica. Hang out with Credence.
Credence is still around.
Yeah, he's still around.
I'm guessing he's not.
You mean Aurelius, Andrew. Aurelius.
Yes, sorry. Doing some knitting. No, this is an excellent question. And Dumbledore is one of the most beloved characters in the entire series. I think there could be a slew of episodes that are dedicated to Dumbledore. Just an hour of Dumbledore in each.
For sure.
I agree. And even with something like this, I don't necessarily need a full episode, but just like a couple of cuts that give me an idea of what he's doing or where he is. Because surely he hasn't like ventured too far away from Hogwarts unless he's looking for Horcruxes.
Totally. And I would like to think that he went to go chill with his brother Abe at the Hogshead, have a few sips of whiskey.
Definitely.
And just catch up. They haven't really gotten the time these last couple of years to connect with each other.
I agree. And it's just like Dumbledore to hang out nearby, right? So if anything goes wrong, he can pop back in.
Oh, I would love to see some scenes in the Hogshead. Dumbledore is slumped over the bar in his third hour of ranting to Aberforth about how crappy things are right now. I would love that so
and
much.
And Aberforth's just there dusting a glass with a dirty rag and being like, you killed our sister. Don't talk to me about how crappy your life
Let
is.
Let it go, man. Let it go. Come on. Give me another butterbeer already. No, you're cut off, Dumbledore. Albus.
They just throw him out of the bar. They're like,
throw out his own brother.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, Dumbledore.
Actually, he uses the goat. The goat chases him out of the bar, angry.
Another Order of the Phoenix question, and this is something that we touched on with our chapter by chapter as well. I really want, and we know how, you know, in the films, they loved their pacing scenes. I actually want a pacing scene that shows how the entire ministry was conveniently emptied out before Harry and company got there.
Yes.
Because they had to have done something. They had to have had like a really ornate, you know, set of imperious curses across everyone. Because even though it's later in the evening, presumably somebody would still be there.
Oh yeah. I mean, government buildings never fully close.
They're never empty. Yeah. So it would be really cool to see some kind of pacing scene before, you know, they get on the Thestrals and make their way to the ministry, where all of a sudden, like, I don't know, everybody's impacted by an imperious curse and they're like, oh, I have somewhere to be. And they just like waltz out of the ministry. Or like they fabricate some kind of emergency that requires everyone's attention and they all run to attend to it and they're kept busy for a couple of hours while, you know, a bunch of adults try to fight 15-year-olds.
And where was Eric? Where did he go really?
Pizza party.
I want to know.
I want to see that pizza party.
Yeah, me too. I wonder what cool wizarding flavors they would have on pizza. That'd be pretty cool.
I really like Laura's suggestion of a pacing scene and you just see like mass imperious going on and everybody in the ministry that are on those upper floors, they just walk into their offices and lock the doors. Maybe they were there the whole time.
Oh yeah.
Just didn't know it. Yeah.
I love the idea of it seeming empty when in fact it's not empty. It's like full. That's pretty cool.
Now I'm thinking of these Wizarding World pizzas. So you can get like Hippogriff toppings, Niffler toppings.
Niffleroni, yeah, you, pepperoni. Oh, no.
Yes. You know what I'm thinking. I feel like Hippogriffs, that'd be a high quality meat. That would be a juicy.
You have to bow to your pizza, meat. Otherwise it will attack you. Oh no, white meat
because it's a bird.
Oh my god. Oh yeah. Yeah.
What's the vegetarian option? Picket.
Oh. Bow truckle leaves.
Bow truckle leaves.
Is a salad option.
That's the lettuce of the Wizarding World.
Oh my
world.
God.
All right, adding it to our brainstorming doc.
Yeah.
Wizarding World pizza toppings.
Thank you. All right.
Sponsored by Little Caesars, Eric's favorite pizza place.
It's true.
Okay, let's move on to Half-Blood Prince. So Dumbledore's research of the Horcruxes. This is a big one. Harry gets introduced to Horcruxes and Dumbledore's research in Half-Blood Prince, but we don't get to see all of how Dumbledore gathered his information over the years. We get some flashbacks. We get these memories that Dumbledore gathered, but how did he even get these memories? I want to see the details there. I want to see him collecting memories from Voldemort's life, like Tom Riddle's childhood, his bullying of fellow orphans, the Gaunts, getting that memory from Bob Ogden. I think all of this would be so interesting, and it would tie in, I think, to Laura's idea with Order of the Phoenix, like after he ran out of there. I'm sure there was some Horcrux investigations going on. I mean, Dumbledore started suspecting the Horcruxes as early as Chamber of Secrets, so there was years of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like how in the TV series, I haven't seen it all the way through, but Once Upon a Time, the character of Rumpelstiltskin, played by a very competent actor, is gradually revealed to have been behind a lot of other characters' backstories, but they show him then in those scenes doing these things. Like, Dumbledore is that type of character where you could have entire episodes where he's off doing this stuff, and he will hold, like, the camera's attention and the gravitas, and you would get to see Dumbledore, like you said, procuring these memories and learning this information. We've already seen it be adapted where he's kind of like telling Harry this stuff. You still would need those scenes, I guess, because you still need a Harry Potter for a Harry Potter TV series. But my interest lies so much more in like these Dumbledore centric episodes and all these other things that you could do with it.
Yeah,
totally. I want to see Dumbledore the Hustler, more of what he did with Mrs. Cole when he's using his charm and his ability to get people drunk and give him information.
Yeah,
there's
he
more
probably
Dumbledore.
Showed her some knitting patterns that he came up with.
Yeah, I'm sure he
I bet
did.
They bonded over that.
And I like this idea, though, Eric, you were talking about, you know, can't have Harry Potter series without Harry, obviously, but this series, though, could really open up the world a little bit more. And I think that's kind of what we've been alluding to with a lot of these suggestions for either episodes or scenes, is that the world can continue to expand in this series. I think if it were just to stick to the things that we're used to, it's just not going to have that same appeal.
Yeah. Agreed.
And also in Half-Blood Prince, I would love to see Snape becoming the Half-Blood Prince. I would love to see a montage in which we see Snape inventing the new spells and potions, including Levicorpus, Sectum Sempra, and Muffiato. I guess that's how you pronounce it. Because these are iconic spells, especially the first two. How do you invent spells? This would also just be an interesting look at how these come to fruition.
I agree completely.
I think it'd also be a really nice tribute to Snape and give us a look at his intellectual side. We see it while he's teaching, but I would just love these solo scenes where Snape is just working, he's in his own zone, he's left alone, he's just coming up with these new ideas.
You could do it almost like a parallel narrative where you'd have Harry going to classes and Snape going to classes when Snape was a student, and have them be
That'd be so cool.
Like,
I would love that.
Yeah, show how different they were as students, really play up the whole Snape could have been Harry's dad thing. Because that was potentially an option at some point.
Both of them dreaming of Lily, but in very different ways.
I hope so.
One platonic, one romantic.
Wow. It's also with the title of Half-Blood Prince, it's almost as if he's trying to give himself this larger than life representation. He's aspiring to be this superhero of sorts, right? We always enjoy seeing how superheroes kind of grow into their roles. And so I think this would be cool for Snape.
Now we have a couple odds and ends. Micah, you have one here.
Yeah, I thought it would be cool to take a look into the life of some of the Weasley children as they were growing up pre-Hogwarts. We hear a little bit about it from time to time, but just thinking about going back a couple of years before Ron, Fred, George, and Ginny are even in Hogwarts, how were they raised? What was life like for them inside that house? You know, Percy may have been off at school already. Same with Bill and Charlie. So I would really like to see this and just kind of growing up within the Weasley home.
Yeah,
definitely. I love that a lot.
I think the Weasleys are, I've mentioned fan favorites a couple of times today, like the Weasleys collectively, they are a fan favorite. So spending time with them, extra time with them would be great for a lot of people.
And they were able to do magic growing up. They were able to ride brooms. They were able to practice
it's
Quidditch.
The childhood Harry never had.
Exactly. So it'd
be an interesting look at what growing up would be like.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I'm really interested, and I have no idea where this would fit, but I've always been interested in more background and insight into the life experiences of Squibs. Mainly because we, you know, the two Squibs that we know the best are Filch and Mrs. Fig. And Filch is the Hogwarts janitor and Mrs. Fig is like an Order of the Phoenix informant. And we don't really get much insight into like what sorts of educations were they entitled to? You know, what kinds of jobs can they qualify for? It seems like an underserved class of people in the magical world who could kind of be a threat. If you think about it, like you have this whole class of people who are treated like crap because of their, you know, blood status and the fact that they can't do magic, but they can still know about magic and know how the wizarding world works. Like, talk about creating a special class of, like, pissed off supervillain. They're like, you treated me like crap, so I'm going to, like, raise a muggle army against you and take you down. Like, it would just be really interesting to see what their life experiences were like. Like, I just think about, yes, Filch does horrible things through the books that are completely inexcusable, and nothing that happened to him during what I'm sure was a really rough upbringing excuses that. But it would just flesh his character out a bit more if we got to see some of that. Like, I'm imagining young Filch, like maybe he had magical siblings, or maybe he didn't find out he was a Squib until later, and just imagining how he must have been treated. And then the fact that the only experience he gets to have at Hogwarts is to be the freaking janitor.
Well, and I think, too, that there's a huge area ripe for the plucking as far as, like, I don't think you get to adapt Harry Potter in this day and age without touching on prejudice in a bigger way. The type of prejudice for purebloodism, for against Hermione and mudblood, like, this is, again, something they could do in book two, when we find out that Filch is a Squib, and we're also worrying about Hermione being called names. Like, you know, there's no way to do it without touching on the very real prejudice and also having to do some work to flesh that out and make it a little bit more realistic and more, you know, four dimensional.
Okay, cool. So I hope everybody enjoyed that. And we are about to discuss scenes that the Fantastic Beasts film series could possibly include. And then Micah came up with a list of the top seven moments from the books that never made the films.
Nice.
So much more to get to today. But first, it's time for a word from our second sponsor this week, an important resource for those who need someone to talk to, BetterHelp. We are living in one of the craziest years of our lifetimes, and you may feel like you need to talk to someone to work through the anxiety. Work with someone who is trained to help you and make you feel better by working with a therapist at BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs in a variety of categories and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours after completing a quick survey right on their site. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. One of my favorite parts about this is there's no going to an office every week. You'll simply do it from the comfort of your own home, at your desk, at on your couch, in your bed, wherever you want. You can participate in therapy. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. Then you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you do with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, and we have a special offer for MuggleCast listeners. Get 10% off your first month of therapy at betterhelp.com/MuggleCast. Again, visit betterhelp.com/MuggleCast. That's better, HELP.com/MuggleCast, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Okay, so Fantastic Beasts, we're in the middle of this film series right now. There are some scenes from Harry Potter that we didn't get to see, that we heard about, that could very well appear in the spinoff series. First of all, I think the biggest one, and we know we're leading towards this, is Dumbledore and Grindelwald's duel. This is where this series is going to end up. It's going to be explosive. It will hopefully be awesome. So we have that to look forward to. What else, Micah?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest thing that fans are looking forward to is learning what exactly happened to Ariana. Dumbledore mentions her in The Crimes of Grindelwald when he's talking with Leta. And so I think that it's only natural, given that we're going to continue to explore what happens between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, that we will go back to that day in Godric's Hollow where Ariana was killed. And find out who ultimately was responsible. Was it Grindelwald? Was it Dumbledore? We know Aberforth was there as well. So looking forward to that casting. And
you are, and only you. What if we don't find out? What if it's left open and viewers have to interpret the scene for themselves? I bet that's a possibility. Because they don't know who was responsible. So why would we find out?
Right.
And then we'll spend 8 episodes talking about it on MuggleCast.
I like that almost better if we don't know in the end, but we'll still get a lot fleshed out by the fact that it's like committed to film. We'll still at least have an educated perspective as to where like we can begin our discussion from.
True.
Right. I agree. We'll see it. They're just going to leave it vague in terms of who was responsible.
I wouldn't almost be surprised if Ariana didn't in some way die for Dumbledore, like get in the way of a curse that was fired by Grindelwald that ultimately destroyed her. We're pretty much all in agreement that she was an Obscurial. Does she protect him in some way that ultimately results in her destruction? It would also explain why Dumbledore is so interested in Credence, and whether or not he is really a Dumbledore, that's a whole nother discussion.
But like even if Dumbledore didn't cast the curse that killed her, he is responsible for her death because of bringing Grindelwald into like their family and all this other stuff. So, I mean, I'd say he as good as killed her or cast the curse that caused her to die. It's just really a matter of the specific circumstance. We really want to see it. Like, I am looking forward to that eventual confrontation and what we assume is Fantastic Beasts 5.
Well, and honestly, if they really wanted to know who did it, all they would have to do is just force each of their wands to reproduce the last spell they created, right?
Right.
Yeah, true.
Maybe they were both out Expelliarmusing each other and they both cast the same spell and nobody knows which one took Ariana's arms off.
And then one other thing I think we can see, this is referenced, we've brought this up a few times over the past couple of years, Hagrid and Tom Riddle's development in the early 1940s.
Ugh.
Hagrid acquired Aragog from somebody, and we have suggested that it could very well have been Newt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Tom Riddle opening the Chamber of Secrets and framing Hagrid. That could very well be in the series because, again, this stuff happened in the 1940s, and that's where Fantastic Beasts is taking place, particularly the fourth and fifth film, we're thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Hagrid got expelled when Hagrid was in his third year. I think Tom was 15, 16, so fifth or sixth year at the time.
He was a little older.
Yeah. But yes, absolutely, 100%. I want to see this in a TV show. I want to see this in the movies. However we get it, I want to consume it.
Definitely. Yeah, and just one other thing to add to that Hagrid-Tom Riddle development, I would say I'd be interested to see Slughorn in a couple of these movies because he, unlike McGonagall, he's actually supposed to be at Hogwarts around this time.
That's a great point, honestly.
And then, Micah, do you want to run through this quick? Just the top seven moments from the books that never made the films. These are, you know, these upset people. People were upset that these weren't in the movies.
The reason why I brought these up is because a lot of, pretty much all of our discussion, as you touched on at the top, is moments that we heard about in the books, but they weren't necessarily in the books, nor were they in the movies. These are moments that were in the books that we absolutely would want to see in a television show that didn't make the films. But we thought these were probably top of mind for most people. The first being, and people can jump in here, please, the Death Day Party. This is a really cool event. Happens on Halloween, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a really great moment for the trio with Nearly Headless Nick, and you get introduction to some characters that obviously don't make it into the films. So I just really enjoyed the banter, too, back and forth between a lot of the ghosts.
The banter and the tossing of the head. The headless hunt comes and gate crashes the party. Like, you know, I know it would be CGI heavy, but why the heck not? You got to, like, flesh out this whole ghost thing sooner or later. We know it comes into play with the Grey Lady eventually. Mm-hmm. So if we get some good ghost material early on in the TV series, it goes a long way.
Agreed.
It could also just be really fun, too. Like, lighthearted, right? Even though it's a death.
People
day
want
party.
More of the ghosts. You remember the first two movies? There was lots of ghost action, or at least in the first movie there was, and then that stuff started disappearing, and people were upset. So,
do you think they'll do Peeves in the
future? Oh, they have to.
They have to.
Yeah.
I mean, why? Yeah. Right?
Why?
Why not? Does he play? Yeah.
What role does, well, we could say that about a lot of characters.
The ghosts add to the magic of the story, right?
Yeah.
It adds whimsical elements to the story. People want that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I would say Peeves is probably up there in the top character omissions from the films. And obviously we know the story there, very sad, but yeah, I would say that they would definitely look to include him in the television series. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on the Marauder's backstory. This is probably I did this in chronological order. This is probably the number one thing that people want to see in a TV series is the Marauder's backstory. It was completely cut. Alfonso Cuarón, David Heyman, shame on you for that in Prisoner of Azkaban. The movie definitely could have been 15 minutes longer to include some information on the Marauders.
I mean, J.K. Rowling could have stepped in on that and said, you need to have this.
That is true. Another character that comes to mind, her storyline completely cut, was Winky. And she was integral when she wasn't drinking to the plot of Goblet of Fire. And I think the contrasting loyalties from house elves to their masters, right? With Dobby and the Malfoys, Winky and the Crouches. And she really plays a very pivotal role, and she was cut out from the movie.
That's a great point. Like, it reminds me how unrealistic the fourth movie plays now that we don't have any of that. Like, how did this happen? Because the whole story of how Barty Crouch was able to escape Azkaban and through Winky's help kind of was, she was like watching over him in the basement and like supposed to not let him out, but she did at the cup, and then all hell broke loose. Like, Winky's the tie to all of that.
Yeah, and you can expand that point out to Spew as well.
Yeah.
That's something that was completely cut.
Definitely. That's always on the list. And jumping ahead a little bit to Half-Blood Prince, Dumbledore schooling the Dursleys. We gave this up so that Dumbledore could, you know, crash Harry's potential, you know. Who knows what would have become
meet
of
cute.
That night.
It was a meet cute.
Yeah. It could have been the night Harry popped his cherry. What I'm saying is this is just a really great moment in the series. Why it didn't come sooner, who knows, but just Dumbledore giving the Dursleys the business. And yep. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to sit and watch Dumbledore like on the couch across from Vernon and Petunia. I believe Dobby shows, or no, Creature shows up at one point too, which the reactions to that is, that filth in her house. Petunia may have just lost her shit, but.
And that's a culmination of 16 or more years of Dumbledore, like his relationship, especially with Petunia, which is, it's probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 or 40 years of their relationship coming to a head. And we, you know, we probably, there's a lot there that could be mined for reaction and effect, even above what's in the text. But by mm-hmm. not adapting it, they kind of weren't able to get into those levels.
And Andrew, you touched on this in one of your moments, but I think just seeing those other memories that were left out from the Horcrux hunt, right? With Bob Ogden, Eric's favorite guy, and Hepzibah Smith. And these were crucial memories that were just thrown out of the script for Half-Blood Prince. Pacing, who knows what the reasoning was.
Old age, and, Burrow on fire, they needed to do.
And then I know we joke about this a lot, but probably the biggest moment that's left out of Half-Blood Prince is Dumbledore's funeral. They give one to a giant spider, but they don't give one to one of the most important characters in the series. And I get it. It would have been sad. It would have been a, you know, tough ending to the movie. But I don't know. Like, you have so many characters that are coming together in this moment. If you read back through Half-Blood Prince, and, you know, this would be a great, you know, especially for a TV series, you know, you always have those episodes where so many characters are back and they come together when they haven't been for such a long time, and you get people from season one and season two and season three. This would have been an appropriate tribute to Dumbledore.
Yeah. People love him.
Well, and if
he needed a proper send off.
If we're seeing these scenes where Dumbledore is the lead character in the TV series, all the people that he's working with are all the actors and characters that we're going to then see come back at his funeral. It'll be a huge, to Micah's point, a reunion of sorts. And
yeah,
you know, like, even Umbridge is there.
Yeah.
Who was the man in the bowler hat?
Well, we saw in episode 3 of season 2 that Dumbledore went to him for new knitting patterns. You know, it's like, oh.
Yeah, he was a long lost lover, as I speculated.
I think to the point of timing, you know, the movie suffered from the fact that if we had had two funerals, we would have had two funerals spaced like 45 minutes apart. And that does feel like a lot, but that would be separate episodes in the TV series. So I think it works much better in this format.
All right. Final one.
Final one. The death of Peter Pettigrew going to Deathly Hallows.
Yes.
We didn't get this. Well, look, Pettigrew is responsible for a lot. Let's be honest here. Much of what he does influences the entire series. And he owed a debt to Harry, and we never saw it paid off on screen. That silver hand basically chokes himself to death. And I know it would have been a little bit too much for people to handle, but, you know.
But
you
not on HBO Max.
No. And think about the end of Deathly Hallows, who you see. You know, it's probably much worse to see Lupin, Tonks, Fred all lying there. After what's happened in the Battle of Hogwarts. But I do understand the visual effects of somebody literally choking themselves would have been probably too much to put on screen. Instead, he just gets hit from behind by Dobby and he's left at Malfoy Manor.
Wait, so Pettigrew gets to live in the movies, but Lavender Brown, we're still not sure about.
Well, maybe Peter's in that
this
category.
This is a good one, too. We also deserve to see in the TV series what happened to Lavender Brown. Did she die? Pottermore said presumed dead. Well, you should know. You're Potter no more. You're by the author. Give us answers.
I also think we need this because it's very significant that all four of the Marauders die. Right? Mm.
Oh, yeah.
And in the movies, it's like, well, the good ones die. We don't really know what happened to the bad one that betrayed everybody.
That is a great point.
Because who do you really see die from the evil side in Deathly, in really any of the films?
Or like
the
Bellatrix, or the books? Right?
Bellatrix, yeah, that was just weird the way they adapted that.
None of it's even satisfying. This is my gripe with Deathly Hallows Part 2, was they just went all in on the 3D thing. They were like, 3D is big right now, y'all. So we're just going to have everybody dissolve and explode into little bits and pieces so that we can cash in on 3D. And it looks like garbage. And
we could cash in on 3D.
Yes. And it doesn't have as much meaning as like that moment where like a body like thuds on the floor and you're like, yeah, Voldemort's dead.
Yeah.
No, he just dissolves into the sky.
Well, slowly. I hate you can that. Appreciate.
So he can come back in 20 years. No, I agree. And I've always had issue too. I didn't put it in here with the actual Battle of Hogwarts in Deathly Hallows Part 2, because there's those moments, especially right after the confrontation between Neville and Voldemort, right? Like Grop shows up with the centaurs. You have the villagers running in from Hogsmeade. You have the house elves running from the kitchens. Like this was a full like team effort that you know, all these groups coming together. Instead, the way that it ended up was just, it was weak, in my opinion. But maybe the TV show can do better.
Weak. Well, on that note, that concludes today's discussion. Thank you, everybody. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And if you have any feedback, send it on in, mugglecast@gmail.com or the contact form on mugglecast.com, or send us a voice memo or voicemail, 1-920-368-4453. Before we get to my revelation, let's do Quizzitch first.
Last week's question, when exactly does Neville say he will join Voldemort? This actually comes from page 731 from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Neville says, I'll join you when hell freezes over.
What a line.
Well, Neville, due to climate change, that might actually happen. So maybe take that back.
So congratulations. Correct answers were submitted by Jeff, Grace, Lazuli, Lance Dance, Brianna, Young Susie Blood, Bort Voldemort, Reese Without a Spoon, Sarah, Johan, Sydney, and Darren Johnson. Next week's question. As a nod to Micah's point about the Mad-Eye Moody scene in the Goblet of Fire, who does Mad-Eye say ambushed him after the fact?
All right, so like I said at the top of the show, last night while brushing my teeth with a Quip toothbrush, I had an epiphany.
Oh, God.
I was thinking about the prophecy that Trelawney made, and I was thinking about how that could open up the TV series. And then I was thinking, how could this TV series actually get made? We all want it. How can it possibly happen? How can it come to fruition? And then it hit me. Several years ago, MuggleCast announced that we were ending the podcast, and then we ended it. I think it was September 2013. And then a week later, WB announced the Fantastic Beasts film series. And what I realized last night while brushing my teeth with a Quip toothbrush was that there was a prophecy made about us and WB too. Either must die at the hand of the other, because neither can live while the other continues to produce new content. And because we sacrificed ourselves, Fantastic Beasts came into existence. So Micah, Eric, and Laura, I must once again ask too much of you. We must once again end the show so that the Harry Potter TV series can come into existence. We must be the ones to end our show. It is the only way.
Interesting theory.
Can we end it with like a wink? Be like, okay. MuggleCast is over. Wink, wink. Come on, WB.
I think we need to own it like we did last time. So, goodbye, everyone. It was nice knowing you all. this is the end. I'm not going to bother with the social media, with the Patreon, with the contact info. It doesn't matter because the show is ending. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, good night and good luck, I guess.
Should we do an episode next week? It may or may not be on the casting for this TV series.